Go ahead, AGP, and run the roll. Kathy, will you lead us in the pledge when we get there? It's on the agenda. Are we ready to go, AGP? Looks like we are. There I am. Okay, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the September 13th, 2011 Joint City Council Planning Commission meeting. Let the record reflect that all council members are here. And if I could speak for you, Rick, let the record reflect that John Solo is not with us because of the passing of his dad, but the other four members are here. And if we would please rise and face the flag, I will be led in the pledge by Kathy Novak.
Good evening, and face the flag with me, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The first item on the agenda is the public comment period. If anybody would like to address this joint meeting, please step right up now. Seeing none, I will bring it back. And welcome our planning commissioners. Thank you for being here tonight, an extra meeting. We appreciate it. We have to cut off around a quarter of, so we're down to 50 minutes or so. So there's nine of us plus staff, so if on every item, if each one of us talks a minute, we'll be only halfway through the agenda. So ask everybody to be succinct. We don't want to rush these things. At the same time, we don't have time to really all talk 5 minutes or have debates on these things. Hopefully we can come to a resolution and a direction on these items. Ms. Johnson has asked for an update on the zoning ordinance and LCP. And we could start with Ms. Wold, who's going to take care of that for us, please. Okay. Hi, Kathleen.
Good evening. An update on the zoning ordinance LCP. Back in March of this year, 2011, we received a letter from the Coastal Commission indicating that our package regarding the general plan LCP update was formally considered withdrawn due to inactivity. And that's particularly due to the fact that part of the code provisions with LCP amendments require public hearing activity within 4 years of submitting it to the Coastal Commission, and now our public hearings are pretty much maybe a decade old or so now at this point. It's that stale. So with that, we'd just like to say that the Coastal Commission's letter indicates that they're still, you know, very much anxious to work with us and suggest that we either consider updating and proceeding with the overall comprehensive general plan LCP, or consider taking it element by element, and they would be willing to work with us and if that avenue was the avenue chosen to go forward with. And that's the update of the LCP general plan amendment.
So basically we're at the starting point again.
Right, we are at a starting point. They've articulated what they think is wrong with what we submitted to them. They've kept the incomplete package for reference, and they their letter just says that we really need to consider whether we will go through either one comprehensively or in a element by element fashion.
Okay, with your permission, Rick, since it was Nancy's
committee that we were all involved with, I think stopped right around November last year, 2010.
Well, speaking as a former Planning Commission member and now City Council member, I'd love to see it move up to a higher priority, because I think it makes everybody's life a lot easier to be dealing with modern, updated issues, guidelines.
I'm going to suggest that this would be the purview of the council to get this kicked off, and suggest, Nancy, tonight at declaration time, you declare this. We'll bring it back to the next meeting, and we'll give staff direction. And if that meets with the approval of the Planning Commission, because you're going to get it first once that ball gets rolling. Any comments from any of you?
Sounds appropriate. That's the way to go.
Any comments from other council members? Go ahead, Noah.
Just have a request, actually, if we could have a copy, a digital copy of Coastal's letter, if that's available.
I have hard copies for you here tonight, but I'll be happy to send it out in an email form, too.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Thank you.
Kathleen offered us the letters 1 minute before we started. It's at least a two-pager, and I said there's just no time to read it, so she'll pass those out. Carl?
Yeah, I'm just going to chime in on that then, that at the direction of the past council, we withdrew the LCP and general plan, as was stated by Ms. Wald, from the Coastal Commission so that the city attorney, along with two council members, could work on redlining it, finding what the differences were between the two plans that have been submitted, and taking on the task of going through that before it comes back to us with that subcommittee and redlining it out and trying to address some of the changes. But I agree with Councilmember Johnson that it makes it very difficult for the Planning Commission and staff, I think, when you're working with an outdated general plan and LCP, and then it's not consistent as we see projects come forward because of having that outdated information. So I look forward to the opportunity to move it back up on the top of the list and keep working on that.
Great. Anything else on this item? Rick, I'm going to turn it over to you. You've got four items here. They're your Planning Commission, and I'll let you handle those.
All right. Thank you. And I'll take the ball and pass it to Jamie, because I think most of these, or the majority of these, might be his. So I'll let Jamie start.
Thank you. Good evening. I think the first one was the bylaws, and that was approved, and I thought it might be appropriate to kick that off tonight. Paul and myself worked on a bylaw draft, and this commission forwarded it on. And just to recognize that we have the new bylaws with us tonight, and that's all that would cover that, unless there's any other additional comments on the bylaws. And then I have the subdivision ordinance, and then Measure D I brought forward as well. And just to be succinct, I would the specifics for the subdivision ordinance, with Kath. Sure.
Can I suggest, Jimmy, just take them one at a time?
Sure.
So are you okay on the bylaws? Is that, I want everybody to have a chance to talk.
Sure.
on the four subjects.
I'll pass it on and see. Get the rest of the comments.
Thanks. What we did with the bylaw draft that we drew up was, I don't know if the city council ever received it, but I think you asked us to draw one up, and but we never saw what happened to it after that.
Here comes our
Maybe
city
Rob
attorney.
Can give us some input.
Just a real input, because maybe procedure, right, it didn't go as smooth as always, which can sometimes happen. Your draft was incorporated into the finals, and I never really got back to Planning Commission as to some of those items that didn't make it into the finals. But we certainly could go over the ones that aren't in either. The ones that were kind of taken out that you find that were recommended were like on procedures for reviewing public hearing items. That's really the place we want to put that, is in our policies and procedures manual, so that everybody's doing them the same, so there's that continuity. Same with voting. That's in our policies and procedures manual. An election of officers is the same. So a lot of that's covered in our policies and procedures, and we didn't want any conflicting language between the two, so it didn't make it in that final draft. But there are a few we can talk about, maybe come to planning and talk about, if that's something you want to add that doesn't conflict with the policies and procedures, but still feel it's important to bring in. We could still talk about that and bring that as a separate item. Remember, this was also kind of a cleanup. What I was really doing is eliminating it out of the municipal code and bringing it all in, so I wanted to make it as clean as possible also for the time being. But we can still relook at it and look at what's missing and still go over that. For example, you know, the public service values for commissioners is something we could do, maybe not in the bylaws, but as something completely separate if we wanted.
And if I can interject, you know, I don't think it would be inappropriate for you to seek a, you don't need a motion, seek a consensus, get a majority consensus, and ask the Public Services Director to please communicate this to council. It's a pretty fast way to get that done. Just a suggestion. But I think if you guys write an email or you make phone calls or however you do it isn't inappropriate. But the idea is just to get everybody on the same page. So. Anything else? Anything else? Anything else on this subject? Go ahead, Jamie.
Thank you. The second one I brought up was on the subdivision ordinance. And that basically we had three projects that fell under the subdivision ordinance. Obviously, the one on Main Street that took, you know, a couple of years to several years to get through. And then another multi-unit project that took about a year to get through. And so with that, I just wanted to bring that to our attention and see if there's some lessons learned on that. So if there's an area where we can streamline that, it seems like that was kind of burdensome on staff to get through one or two projects that might take a couple years at a time. The subdivision ordinance was approved in 2007, and to have one project that takes several years to get through with the current subdivision ordinance, I just make that comment that, you know, if there's areas where we can improve that, I just wanted to bring that to light.
Well, you know, I can share with you that I believe the majority of this council wants projects to move quicker, and I can share with you that staff is working together to improve that. As far as the subdivision ordinance, if that's causing problems, I would be supportive of you guys looking at that and making recommendations to us. Would we need to ask the Planning Commission to do that? Can they do that on their own? How would that process work? Anyone? All right. If that's what I'm hearing from the majority of the Planning Commission, that we want to take a look at the subdivision ordinance, I'd like to hear that now. And if I do, I will declare that at declaration time later tonight. And we will ask staff then to bring that back to you, and you can start picking it apart and give us recommendations on what would streamline it.
I
support that.
Yeah. Okay. Can I back up a little bit? Sorry about that. Because I think in the past, during this time where we bring items forward, it just kind of fell this way for this particular meeting of ours. Usually we do deliberate and kind of get consensus on, yeah, we want these specific items on the agenda. So that'd be correct that, you know, they're really we submitted our items via email, and that's how we got all these items on the agenda. So I think probably in past meetings we probably have a better opportunity to discuss these and, you know, at least get a consensus that we should be bringing them forward to this meeting. You know, I'll take any more comment from my colleagues.
Well, I'm supportive. It's your majority.
There you go.
Okay, I'm going to just jot that down right here, and that will happen. So probably in a month or so, you're gonna see it, and you'll know why. Okay. Go ahead.
And then Measure D was another project we had that we only had one project that had to do with Measure D that I think everyone's familiar with. And since that that lease site will be, it looks as though it's going to be expiring as far as the date goes to where there isn't that particular use. So whether or not that property or that lease site can be fully utilized is in question. It appears under Measure D, so I thought that would be something to bring forward to council to discuss how effective or if Measure D needs to be reviewed for the waterfront and particularly that area.
Rick, could I hear from the other commissioners on this?
I'm really not supportive of this particular one. I think there's a reason Measure D is there, and I think the reasons are still valid for it to be there. And I think if things do come up, that they're dealt with on a case-by-case basis. And this was a vote of the people, which would require another vote of the people to change. Expensive, long process. So myself, I mean, I'm just one vote, but my vote would be not to make any change.
Or
okay. Sometime back, I believe it was last year or maybe early this year, council made a determination that there isn't sufficient definition for abandoned or vacated. And in order for us to determine anybody has or is going to lose their nonconforming status, it has to have a discontinued use for 6 months or more and be abandoned or vacated, or I guess I could look it up and give you the exact term. But this is common throughout the state of California, that when, especially during bad economies like there is now, that places, tenant spaces stay empty. That doesn't mean that the leaseholder or the property owner is not actively pursuing trying to get them filled. So no way, shape, or form does the city staff have the direction from council to declare this a discontinued use of a nonconforming use. So there isn't this jeopardy that people seem to be taking it in literal terms. Oh, there's not anybody in there, ergo it's been abandoned. And that's not the direction we have from our council.
One more comment that is overlooked too. Our LCP specifically states in 84 we had 12 sports fishing boats. So to me, that's an indication of what was allowed at that time in that area. And until we reach that, then we're okay, and we're not at that level now. I think 5-6 we're at right now. So we're, if we get to the 12 limit, that's where I would say then we're butting up against Measure D.
Okay. Thanks. That was great. Good.
So that said, I guess we won't at this time proceed with that, but any council member has the ability to declare it, and if there's another member, I mean, then we could move forward with it. Otherwise, let's see. I want to make sure everybody's got an opportunity to say, talk.
I don't want to talk on this.
Okay. You guys? Okay. So... I can share with you, I happen to know that there's not universal agreement up here as there isn't there. Uh-huh. So if anybody up here wants to bring it forward, they'll speak up. Other than that, I think we should probably just stay mute. You do have Planning Commission meeting frequency on your list.
Yeah, and I think that was brought up by Commissioner Solu. I think we had a couple of meetings there where we didn't really have a lot on the agenda, and his feeling was, well, maybe we could put these things off and not meet as often, or when there isn't a lot on the agenda, maybe we won't meet. But there, my feeling is there's still things we have to meet for twice a month to keep things going. And even though they might not be real dramatic or controversial or exciting, we still need to meet to talk about them and keep them on track. So that's my feeling on it. I would go along with keeping the meeting scheduled the way they are now.
I would also agree with Rick.
Well,
I'd concur on that.
I concur as well.
Well, you'll have to share that news with John then when he returns.
I'm sure he'll be fine with that.
I'm sure he will. Okay, Rob.
I wanted to go back to your subdivision item, because I don't, if council would like to, they certainly can do that as a future declaration and do it at a regular council meeting, but it's on your agenda to discuss changes to the subdivision ordinance. So if council wanted to, right during this meeting, make the motion to direct that as a work item for Planning Commission, you could do that. So it's up to you.
But then that would like mean it would be quicker and more efficient and streamlined. Well, let's thank you, Rob, for that. Bravo. How does council feel about that? You are so directed then, staff. I don't know who to look at exactly. You. Andrea. Okay, there. The it's in motion. I get to cross it off my notes, and thank you very much, Rob. Okay, anything else?
Yes. If we could clarify, the number one priority is the LPC. Number two priority, it would be the subdivision ordinance.
Okay, and we're leaving that up to Nancy for, but the same rule, right? We could do that right now? Well, it's going to make.
I just want to make sure you don't list out any other. I mean, there's and Kathy could there's sign ordinance they're working on. There's a few other long-term projects. So if you're going to get into that subject, make sure you've got all of them to prioritize. But that might be a good subject since you've got a few minutes.
We're talking about the subdivision ordinance.
And they're working on the sign ordinance. And is there anything else?
Things that we were discussing. Cool. Well, that's part of the zoning. So am I hearing that we could make this the priority? I mean, the sign ordinance is going to get folded into the zoning.
Well, my understanding that direction from council previously was to take that separately because it's important and they didn't want it waylaid, you know, what may be protracted with, you know, years of going round and round. And that's one reason we did some outreach to the Coastal Commission to see how receptive they would be to having us carve out certain elements and take it forward. And that was my understanding was that the sign ordinance is a priority and it shouldn't get waylaid with a comprehensive update.
Gotcha.
Okay.
So where do we put the LCP and the zoning ordinance in our priorities? I'm looking for help.
Without Mr. Leivik here, I mean, I think what we'll do is bring back to you exactly what that work plan would have. As you discussed, I mean, we have done the heavy labor from a non-policy as to show where we are at the LCP, redlined the draft done in 2000 and the draft done in 2004. You know, now it's going to take Planning Commission, you know, staff or a subcommittee to begin piling through that and making recommendations as from a policy standpoint as to what policies fit Morro Bay and would be acceptable to Coastal Commission. And that's not an easy undertaking, and it's time intensive. So, and I don't know what Rob's ideas are on doing that are, you know, whether to do that through public workshops, whether to do that through the Planning Commission. You know, I just don't know how he wants to vent that.
Well, how about then if I seek a consensus to get the Zoning Commission, Zoning Ordinance, and LCP, at least get it moved up the ladder without stating it's priority number one or two or three, but at least it's in one, two, or three. Is that any kind of direction? It doesn't feel like it. Is it? You wanted to speak? Let me see what the comments are, and then I'll seek that.
Well, I would probably look to, and I don't know where we would do it, but look back at forming a subcommittee again of one or two council members and or planning commissioners to work separately to bring this so that it doesn't get bogged down on just staff and there's input from, you know, in regards to policies that are going to be of the council and or planning commission. So I think that it was working well with two members of the council before working with staff and going through it. It was just a change in council. I actually was, if I can skip back a second to Mr. Solo's request, he had emailed me about the meeting dates. And I don't know if you want to finish the LCP before I go back to that.
You want to insert.
Okay. He just, I think just from his email, I would share that his reason for bringing this on the meeting frequency was, and I believe it was also expressed by Mr. Nagy when I was watching one of the Planning Commission meetings, that they're here, AGP's here, staff's here. One item, 30 minutes later, they're done. And he had said several months ago, is there a way to have more items? I think it was the same thing with Mr. Solo, is that they're coming and they're hearing one item rather than, and the last meeting there was actually three, which is the most that I've seen in the meetings I've followed in probably the last 5 or 6 months. And so I think he was looking at it from Planning Commission's time, staff's time to prepare for it, AGP's time, and a concern in that sense. And that was why he brought that forward. So I don't want that to just be bypassed that he was looking for less meetings. There was a reason for it, and I don't know how we bring more items forward, because I do see that as not utilizing staff time and AGP time as best as possible when they're done 45 minutes later.
So. Carla had asked to speak during that. I apologize to you, so that's why she was inserting that. Are you finished with your over here regarding zoning ordinance LCP?
I would just say that I agree with what Carla said before we went back to the meetings, that I think getting the subcommittee and getting this thing going is a very good idea.
And I don't know, to look at Kathleen or Rob, as far as getting the subcommittee going again, is this, can you comment on that?
You can do it right here. What was the makeup going to be? Two council members? You were going to have two planning commission members on it also? How did you want to do that?
How does the planning commission feel about serving on this? It could be one or two or none.
Who has an interest in doing that? I mean, it was your...
Look at those arms shoot up.
Absolutely, I'm in.
Okay. Jamie wants to be on that.
And how does council feel about just one council member and one planning commissioner?
The council and planning commission.
Great.
I'd like to comment, too, if it looks like after that first meeting you think a second planning commissioner would be interested and available, and it would be helpful, that would be certainly worth bringing back to make that addition.
I'm open to a second planning commissioner, too, but I'm not open to dictating it. So if another one wishes, has the burning desire to be on it, speak up to your chairman, and I think that this council would be supportive.
If I could, Mr. Nagy will be the alternate until that decision's made.
You have been appointed by your chair. Anything, George? Nancy? Anything else? Anything from staff? Okay, well, thank you for taking the time to come tonight and have this dialogue, and you all know that we're all available to any of you anytime on any issue. You're welcome to call your mayor or any council member and discuss anything. It's not inappropriate. Just, we're here for you. I know that you don't see me anyway often enough. I called Rick this afternoon. I was embarrassed. It's been so long since I've interacted with the Planning Commission. It just, these months just zip by. But I'm here. I'm a very visible guy. We all are, as you are, and we're available to you if you need us.
Well, that's probably not a totally bad thing that we haven't heard from
maybe,
you.
Maybe.
And if I could, I'd just like to say I'm really proud of the people on the Planning Commission. I think they've done a great job, molded well, and getting things done, and couldn't be happier.
Yeah, I'm very impressed with the job you're doing. I do watch your meetings, and you do see me pop in and out. You're doing great. So bravo, and thank you for serving. Final chance? Last chance? Last chance? All right, we're adjourned till the city council meeting. Thank you again. Good evening, and welcome to the September 13th, 2011 Morro Bay City Council meeting. It's great to see everybody here, and thank you for being here. Let the record reflect that all members of council are present, and we'll begin, please, with a moment of silence. And if you would please rise and face the flag, we'll be led in the pledge by Ms. Susan Slayton.
Ready, begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Item D1 on the smart meters has been pulled, and I have no further announcements. Carla?
Good evening. Thank you. Just some updates for the calendar. A reminder that this Saturday, the 17th, is National Clean Shores, and it is coastal and creek cleanup both, starting at 9 a.m., and there are locations all over Morro Bay down at the beach and the local creeks. You can get information at EcoSlow. The JPA Alternatives Site Workshop is going to be held Monday the 19th at Cayucas Vets Hall from 6 to 8. A reminder that this week is free cleanup week for Morro Bay Garbage, so those of you who have not put your garbage out yet or extra things have the rest of this week to put out extra bags. Integrated Waste Management in San Luis Obispo County meets tomorrow, and each one of the cities has a representative. I'm the representative for Morro Bay. Tomorrow they will be addressing the potential ordinance banning single-use plastic bags, these are the grocery bags, and that meeting is at the SLO County Government Center at 1:30 tomorrow, and there is public comment. It is a public comment item. Tuesday, October 4th, is the Morro Bay 4-H Club meeting. The 4-H Club just started this year, so I would like to invite any members of the community interested in being in 4-H as a member or leader. The meeting is at 7 p.m. at the Morro Bay Grange Hall. And Eco Rotary Club meeting is Thursday, the 22nd. For those of you interested, we meet at the Morro Bay Golf Course at 5:30.
Thank you, Carla. Nancy?
Okay, this Thursday at 5:30, right here in this building, San Luis Obispo County. So this was the exact date of the election 100 years ago today. So please come and join the festivities. Also, let's see, the Homeless Coalition will meet tomorrow afternoon to determine what we're going to do for our retreat to help clarify the direction of that group. So if you have any input, let me know. Thank you. That's it.
Great, and I see some city employees, SEIU members have come in since we sat down, and we want to welcome you. George?
Yeah, well, let's remember this weekend we're going to have the Margarita Festival, and so it's a good time for everybody, and let's get out there and support them. It'll be followed up by, in a couple weeks, it'll be the Harbor Festival. It's already here, so two great events coming up, and bravo for those people that worked so hard to make these events work. Thank you very much.
Thanks, George. Noah?
Yeah, thank you. I just did want to follow up on Ms. Borchard's announcement regarding the wastewater treatment plant and the draft alternative siting analysis, that we do have that workshop coming up on the 19th in Cayucas from 6 to 8. And also at the city's website on the homepage, there's a link there because we have a comment period where you don't necessarily have to be at the workshop to make comments on that draft. So you could go there, and we're accepting comments through the 30th. And I'd also just like to respond, for the sake of what are we pulling the item, the smart meter item?
Well, I sent you an email this afternoon that you read earlier, and it's explained there. You want me to go over that?
I would, because I'd like to dispute that.
At your at the last meeting, you declared, I would like to have a review of the smart meter issue. These are your verbatim words. There are some things and questions that people are asking about what their options are, and I think it would be important for us to review that and decide whether we would like to join with some of the actions that communities around the state are taking to influence the CPUC, California Public Utilities Commission, and be involved with commenting on this process. I'd like to see this come back for some discussion with council. And what came back to council, in my view, reached beyond that. Authorization to file a notice of joiner with the California PUC, protesting the application, etc., legal action. And based on that, and I wrote you that if I can be overruled on this, but I would invite you, if that's your intention, then state that at declaration time. We'll bring that back next time. Otherwise, we'll bring back what your declaration was, discussion of the smart meters, on the next meeting.
Okay, well, I would say that your interpretation is different from mine. I think it's very clear that I say I would like to talk about joining the actions of other communities. We had received a very clear email inviting us to join those actions before that meeting, and so I would like to ask the attorney to give us his interpretation of whether or not this is in line with what I requested or not, and that we continue with the item tonight. So, Mr. Schultz, if you wouldn't mind, let us know what you think.
I think you mentioned that council on August 12th or 13th received the email on the ability to join the proceedings that were going on and to opt out. And then based on Councilman Smuckler's request to join in and look at what other communities have done, and that was supported, what I thought, by two other members, I called Councilmember Smuckler, asked him what the item was about, and to make sure this is what wanted to bring forward, and so it's being brought forward. You know, it looks like it's within the parameters of mine, but it's up to council. If they want to pull the item as a whole and not discuss it, that's up to them. But the report talks about what other communities are doing. What other communities are doing is they're joining in on this petition. And you can decide on its merits, or you can pull it and bring it back later.
And I see that other communities are writing letters and passing resolutions and doing things other than joining a legal action, and this is the way that I read it. And so to put this to rest, let's just see where council is on this.
Well, I would also comment that we have tried that. We have tried letters. We have tried resolutions. They haven't been respected. So this is a logical next step, and I think we received the support. I would suggest that we deal with this tonight so we don't have to keep delaying the discussion and take it head on.
Your request is clear, and I'm just looking for counsel on this. I just go down the line. George? And we need... Pardon me? Pulled.
My understanding is via a call from a woman from PG&E that the Public Utilities Commission meets tomorrow in this issue, and I'd kind of like us to do something tonight so that we have a statement there.
Carla? Morro Bay Fire Department and an esteemed citizen, as you all are. Good evening, Keith.
Good evening, Mayor, Council, staff, community members at home. My name is Keith Taylor. I'm a resident of Morro Bay and a friend of the Morro Bay Fire Department. Tomorrow, we are going to have the groundbreaking ceremony for the staff and administration of our fire department. It's going to be at 12:30 in the back of the fire department where the fence is. The community is invited to this, and we're going to have coffee and cake afterwards. This has been a long time coming. We started on this in 2004. But thanks to the community members, who we have to thank because they are the ones that passed Measure Q, the half-cent sales tax, which gave us the opportunity to not only build the fire department, but also get a new fire engine, 5392. And then with donations along with that, we got our rescue vehicle. So it's just basically a little celebration that we're really getting to the end of this, and it's supposed to be built in about between 12 and 14 months, Mike said, so we'll see how that goes. But the main thing is happening, and I just want to invite all of the community because they are the ones that made this happen. Thank you very much, Mayor, for allowing me to speak.
Thank you, Keith. Thanks for your efforts. Hope everybody comes out at 12:30 tomorrow for the groundbreaking. This is a big deal. Mr. Greg Kobar. Welcome.
My name is Greg Kobar, and I'm the owner of a new business, Calco's Trade, and I want to first of all tell the City Council how much I appreciate being able to have the opportunity to speak in front of you, and also to the Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce, who invited me to speak this evening as a business owner. And I have a new office in Morro Bay, which I'm very happy about. I've been a property owner in Morro Bay for many, many years, and also was involved with developing all of the sponsorships for Morro Bay Harbor Festival in the 90s. So it's great to be back involved with Morro Bay. I just wanted to mention before talking about Calco's Trade that I had an opportunity to attend two tourist marketing sessions here over a period of 2 days, and also the Visitor Center workshop. And it really helped give me gain some insight into really the direction that Morro Bay wanted to go regarding tourism. And now how that fits in with Calco's Trade is that Calco's Trade is an organization made up of members of owners of businesses, and these businesses trade their products and services. I'm sure that a lot of you are aware of barter and trade and things like that. Well, it's really come into the internet age, the electronic age, where businesses are able to trade their products and services, but also do it online. In other words, take their funds of their trade dollars in their accounts and put them into different accounts. And Calco's Trade is part of a network of 50,000 businesses across the country. And the reason why I mention that is because one of my goals after attending the sessions on tourism marketing as well as the visitor center is to make these 50,000 business owners who are part of the network of trade throughout the United States in conjunction with Calco's Trade aware of Morro Bay and its direction in tourism and its goal really of making people across the country more aware of what Morro Bay has to offer. In fact, I wanted to mention real briefly a conversation I had today with a trade organization member. Actually, she was the owner of a trade organization in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And I was telling her about the fact that Morro Bay is just an incredible place, and there are some wonderful new members of Calco's Trade here in Morro Bay. And she said, well, Greg, we're having a member mixer for the Albuquerque, New Mexico trade members at the Hilton on October 14th, and we'd love if you could come and present about Morro Bay and what's available there for trade members to use their trade dollars to spend at the hotels and the restaurants and any other type of kayaking and Chevrolet cruises and on, wonderful things here in Morro Bay. And I thought, well, what a great opportunity to present Morro Bay to an entire organization. And so after talking to Craig Schmidt, it looks like we're going to develop some ideas of presenting not only Morro Bay to trade members in person, but to put them up on the internet for 50,000 businesses across the country to know about with one click of the mouse. So anyway, I would encourage anybody to please sit down with me and let me explain a little more in detail about Calco's Trade and how it could really be of great benefit to the city of Morro Bay.
Thank you, Greg. You'll be a great spokesman for Morro Bay. Appreciate it. Glad you're back. Hank Roth. Good evening.
Good evening. Good evening, Mayor and Council. Hank Roth, Morro Bay, and the chairman of the County Child Injury Prevention Coalition. September 18th through 24th is Child Passenger Safety Week. The SLO County Child Prevention Injury Coalition will be hosting a child safety seat checkup on Saturday, September 24th at the Target.
To talk about the Hunger Walk that is being sponsored by the Food Bank Coalition and Central Coast Clergy and Laity for Justice. The Hunger Walk is September 25th. The walk in Morro Bay will go from St. Timothy's. It starts at 2 o'clock, and it will be stopping at Carla's Kitchen for those of you who don't want to make the whole walk all the way down to Coleman Park and back. And you may ask, why walk? Why is the importance of Hunger Walk? Well, the Food Bank Coalition services over 40,000 people within the county, and approximately 40% of all recipients are children or families with children, and 15% are senior citizens. And that number is growing. And I can tell you, just being involved with the food box program at Del Mar School that has been going on for the last 3 years, the number this year has doubled for those who are requesting food twice a month than from last year. So it's really important that we provide not only just our awareness of the need in the county, but also to raise dollars to help keep the food bank moving forward. They are able to provide food at 14 cents a pound to those agencies that are able to come in. And all of the produce that goes out free. So it's a tremendous program that really assists those that are in need in our county. So there are some handouts in the back with a website to sign up for the walk if you want to sign up online through slowfoodbank.org. And I also have a couple of walk packets, and I will leave those back there. If you haven't signed up yet, it's a good time to do that. And if you don't want to walk, just go online and click Morro Bay and pick a walker and support them. It would be much appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you, Paula. Thanks for coming tonight. Thanks for being so active in our community. Okay, we're open to any of you now. Just whoever would like to go next, just step right up. First one up there gets the mic. Don't be bashful. Here we go.
Hi. My name is Lexi Bell. I'm the Assistant Director for the Morro Bay National Estuary Program. You may remember that I came in and spoke to you all a few months ago, about our update for our management plan for the estuary. And if you're not familiar with the estuary program, we work to restore and protect the estuary by bringing lots of different organizations together, government entities, nonprofits, other local businesses and citizens to do collaborative work in the watershed to protect the estuary. And we're updating our management plan because it's been around for about 10 years. And it's served us really well, but there's some new things going on in the area and some things that we've accomplished, so we'd like to update those items. And we had a first public meeting in April, and we had a couple of workshops in the summer, and now we're having a second public meeting September 29th from 6 to 8 p.m., and it will be at the Sea Pines Golf Resort in Los Osos at the conference room there. So we welcome anyone who's interested to come, and we'll talk a little bit about the plan and give you the update for the status of where it's at right now, and we'll get some input from everybody that attends on what you think about the action plans we have in there and if we're missing anything. And it's really important for us to hear from everybody because the plan really serves the community in achieving what everybody wants to see from the estuary and the habitats and the view and the landscapes around the estuary. So please come and help us out, 6 to 8 p.m., September 29th at the Sea Pines Golf Resort. And if you have any questions, you can give us a call. Our phone number is 805-772-3834, or you can go to our website, which is the initials for Morro Bay National Estuary Program, or mbnep.org. And then I also wanted to mention briefly what Councilmember Burchard brought up, the Coastal Cleanup Day. So the estuary program sponsors the Sandspit site. So if you'd like to go to the Sandspit to clean up, you do have to call in advance. So you can call our number, that 772-3834, to get on the list. Any other site, you can show up the same day and volunteer. So we hope to see everybody out there. Thanks.
Thanks, Leslie. Who would like to go next? Oh, Craig. I'm sorry, Hunter and then Craig. Come on, Hunter. He beat you. You're slow, Craig. We're going to put you up next. Hi, Hunter.
He wanted to follow me. Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council and staff and the public of Morro Bay. I'm here to announce that we're less than 3 weeks away from the annual Morro Bay Harbor Festival. I brought a little flyer here. It's really shaping up. We've made a lot of changes this year. They're subtle changes, but they're big changes, and we're really focusing on the celebration of the harbor and the 30-year history that we've been here, and we're focusing on local merchants, and we're focusing on the family. Musical headliners this year. On Saturday, we're really proud to bring in the Young Dubliners, which is a world-renowned Celtic rock band that is recently calling San Luis Obispo County their home. And on Sunday, we have an 80s rock star, Ronnie Montrose, is going to be there. So we built really good shows around there. All our music, the other.
Good evening. Hunter and I actually choreographed that. I wanted to follow up. I'm Craig Schmidt with the Chamber of Commerce. And if there are businesses out there that want to showcase their business at the Harbor Festival, give the Chamber a call at 772-4467. It's only $80 for a table space for 2 days, anticipating some 15,000 people to come through that gate and view what you have to offer for your businesses. Closer to today, on Thursday, we have the first annual Estero Bay Tri-Chamber Mixer. We've joined together with Cayucas and Los Osos, and we'll be meeting Thursday at 5:30 at the Boatyard on the Embarcadero at the Visitor Center, and that'll be sponsored by Donati Family Vineyard, Central Coast Women for Fisheries, Morro Bay Commercial Fishermen's Organization, and the Face of California Fishing. Senator Blakesley will be there, and there'll be a lot of seafood and just some really good networking and fellowship, so please come to that. And last and certainly not least, the 5th annual Avocado and Margarita Festival on Saturday the 17th. George, thanks for the plug on that. Hope to see you all down there. We have Lenny Blue and the Otter Guys, Bobby Santa Cruz and the Mystics, and Cheval Experience playing music all day long from 11 to 6 o'clock. We've got an excellent menu of food items from vendors from all over the Tri-County area. It should be a great time, so come on down and join us in some fun. Thanks.
Thanks, Craig. Who'd like to go next? Hi.
Hi. My name is Linda Winters. I am a citizen of Morro Bay and a California State Park volunteer for the last 13 years. And some of you may remember me from last fall. I stood before you four times to tell you about a wonderful proposition that was going on the November ballot. It was Proposition 21, which would have separated the state parks from the general fund and created a separate designated trust fund, a wonderful solution to a really, really tough problem that we had with our state parks and the funding that we have for them all. Well, alas, I had no intentions of coming back here, but here I am today to tell you of a new campaign that is going before us to help save the state parks. It is one that we had truly hoped the new governor would pass the budget so that we would not be suffering so very, very much as far as the state parks were concerned. But we had a $33 million budget cut from the state parks, and we now have the real and present danger of 70 state parks closing, permanently closing, folks. These are parks that belong to you and to I, and it's a really, really, really sad state of affairs that this has to happen like this. One of the state parks is our very own Morro Strand Campground in State Beach. This is real. Closure, 25% of all of our state parks. And what we're asking each and every one of the Californians here within the range of my voice and all of California, hoping that all of you will tell all of your friends and network that we can make a difference as far as this closure is concerned. And how would you do that? Okay, first and foremost, on this card that we have over here, there is a website, savestateparks.org. Go on to that website and link on to your local representatives, and you can sign an e-petition saying that you do not want these parks to close. These are parks that have been saved for all of us for hundreds of years now, and we won't settle for the fact that they are going to close any of them. And another thing that we would ask everyone to do is to, while you're on to that website, go on and sign that you would like the governor to pass AB 42. It recently passed on the state assembly. Can I have two more
seconds?
Sorry,
Linda.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming. I'm sorry to cut you off.
There's a petition in the back.
Let's invite the tobacco control ladies right after Taylor, and then you girls. I'm sorry, ladies. Hi. Hi.
Hi. My name is Melissa Peters, and I'm here representing...
Melissa, pull the mic down.
Oh, yeah. I'm short. I'm here representing the County Public Health Department, specifically the Tobacco Control Program of San Luis Obispo. Good evening, Mayor and members of the City Council and staff. Today we'd like to congratulate the City of Morro Bay for their ordinance that banned smoking within the boundaries of the city beaches and the T-piers. In 2006, the U.S. Surgeon General stated that secondhand smoke exposure causes disease and premature death in non-smokers, and in 2010 maintained that there is no risk-free level of exposure to secondhand smoke. The Tobacco Control Program of San Luis Obispo would like to thank the City of Morro Bay for providing their citizens with a smoke-free community. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Melissa.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hi. My name is Katie Ott, and I'm also a member of the Tobacco Control Program.
And aside from Morro Bay's smoke-free city beaches and piers, I'd like to recognize the Duncan Group, who has adopted smoke-free policies for their properties in multi-unit housing complexes. By eliminating their exposure to secondhand and third-hand smoke, they've been able to provide a more healthy and healthy living environment for their tenants. These properties include the Oceanside Garden Apartments, the Ocean View Manor, Pacific View Apartments, and the Sequoia Apartments. Third-hand smoke, unlike second-hand smoke, is the tobacco that is left behind in the walls. It's the things that you smell in the environment that after a smoker or someone that has been in the room has left. And so it basically can cause increased property management costs and maintenance costs, and it's hard to clean and all that. So they've done a really good job with that. These properties were also recognized in a print media ad in June of 2011 in local papers, and we'll be sending out letters of recognition to all of those properties, and we're slowly working our way through the county for that as well. So just wanted to congratulate them on a smoke-free campus. So on behalf of the Tobacco Control Coalition, we'd like to thank you, the members of the council, for your time.
Thank you, Katie. Thanks for coming tonight. Who would like to go next? Betty?
Good evening. My name is Betty Winholtz, and I want to speak to item A4. This has to do with the grand jury report on conservation. I want to speak first to the grand jury recommendation number 6, which says that we should consider revising our sewer bills to show that water usage affects our sewer charges. The city's response to that recommendation is, the city council will consider this issue when the sewer rates are reviewed. Now, I'm objecting to this city response for two reasons. The first is, revising the sewer bill, the piece of paper that we all get in the mail, has nothing to do with reviewing or changing the rates. It's merely a clerical task. Changing the rates is a policy decision. This recommendation should be implemented now because our current policy is to up the rates a certain percentage every year until we get to the wastewater treatment plant upgrade, which would technically be in 3 years. So for 3 years, the public will not know that the relationship between sewer and water. The second reason is the jury also noted there is no reference to the rate in our sewer bills. And they said that makes us, quote, not informative. So by not referencing the water rate scale, the city is underutilizing its bills for promoting conservation. The conservation is the city's number one method for water management. By not implementing a change in our bill now, the city is not fulfilling its own approved water plan. So I would recommend or encourage you to change the city response to the city council will implement this policy by the end of the year. I would briefly like to review recommendation number 1, which is the Morro Bay should review its water rate schedule because it hasn't since 1994. I find it surprising that the report or response from the city chose not to comment on why water rates have not been increased since then. Because the reason is the city instituted one of the highest water rates in the state when we signed on for state water, and only recently have rates in other jurisdictions caught up to us. As an afternote in terms of process, I want to acknowledge that this report was made in June 8, 2011. The city's had it for 3 months. It's just now coming to you one day before it...
And please, approving items A1, A2, A5, and A6.
So moved.
Second.
Discussion. All in favor say aye. 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 Opposed. Motion carries 5-0. A4, Noah.
Yes, A4, I would like to follow up on the comments made during public comment. Those did make sense, and I think it's something we could do very easily as far as implementing number 6 and 3. It is a clerical adjustment that would only enhance the awareness that citizens are able to gather from the bill itself. So my suggestion is that we maintain it as is, except we actually implement 6 and 3 before we update the billing structure.
Could you be a little clearer on exactly what you're asking for?
Yes, I would like to, instead of postponing recommendations, you have your letter here that we're planning on sending as a response.
Right here.
And with the recommendations, we review how we're going to respond to the grand jury's recommendations. Under recommendation 3, instead of saying we will update this or consider updating it when we review the rates, that we simply update it into the water bill as we can and take care of that now or as soon as possible.
With
number 6.
If you want to do this tonight, I guess I would be looking for succinct language. What are you looking for? If you want to change the letter tonight, the letter goes out tomorrow. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Well, I would suggest then that we agree that we can adjust that sooner than when we update the water structure or the rate structure, and we respond by saying we will implement this change instead of responding by saying we'll wait until water rates are reviewed, which is that could push it out to an indefinite time into the future. Why not just respond and say we will implement that change and resolve that now so we don't have to keep that on the pending items of discussion and action?
Let's hear from staff on that, on number 3 specifically, and what he's asking for. Can we have a response?
Good evening, Mayor Yates and City Council. We can certainly look at that. My only concern, there shouldn't be a, there isn't a problem with the information. My only concern is how it's going to go on the bill and how that works in terms of our software and how the bill comes out. Perhaps what we can do, if the council's interested in changing the letter, is put some verbiage in as soon as feasible or by the time we implement rates. My only concern with committing to do it now is how that's going to work in terms of our computer software and how those bills are generated.
Respond to that. I absolutely agree. I wouldn't want to lock us into a certain date, but it is something that we could take care of before we get to the rate structure review. So to give staff that direction to go forward with that, I think would be good.
Well, why don't we just take these one at a time? I guess I'm okay with staff's response here, and let's hear from council. Carla?
I'm okay with number 3 since Atascadero is the only city that is doing that. I don't feel there's an outcry, obviously, in the county that we have to jump on that real quick, but I would support number 6 in putting conservation information on the bill.
Nancy, let's just take number 3.
Number 3 is fine.
George?
Number 3 is fine.
Okay, so now do your number 6.
With number 6, I think that's a natural extension of number 3. Actually, Ms. Borcher, you didn't have a problem with number 6. It was number 3 that you were so on. And I would suggest that if we can format that into the bill without a lot of extra work, it just is another piece of information to help with the conservation awareness.
And what language are you suggesting?
A similar language that, at the moment, the language, the City Council will consider this issue when water rates are reviewed. It would simply say, we will implement this change as soon as possible or as soon as feasible. So we're showing them that we're going to take that action, and it's not something that has to come back to the council for further discussion.
And is the staff okay with that?
Yes.
And you have the language?
The City Council will implement this as soon as feasible or by or when sewer rates are revised.
You good with that? You good with that?
Yeah, that's good.
You guys good with that?
Okay. Do you want a motion to approve?
Approve as and with the change to number 6.
And 3. I will move we approve.
We're not changing number 3. You weren't supported on that.
Oh, it wasn't. I think we were.
Not number 3. Not number 3.
No? Okay.
Yes.
So move that we approve this response to the grand jury with the amendment to number 6 as discussed.
And I don't see that there's anything left that we can get through quickly, so we're going to take a break and we'll come back at 7, and I want to welcome the other employees that have come in the room since we've started. We're glad you're here. 7 o'clock. Okay, we are at public hearings. Item B1, Ms. Luker.
Good evening, Mayor and City Council. I have a brief staff report for you this evening. As you know, the contract with the Service Employees International Union, or the SEIU employees, expired on June 30th of 2011. Contract negotiations began well in advance of that date, on or about February 3rd, with the final of 5 meetings held on July 21st. Unable to come to any mutual settlement, impasse was declared by SEIU. Pursuant to the city's impasse procedures, SEIU waived the initial meeting with the city manager and requested to move directly to a meeting with a state-appointed mediator, with that meeting being held on August 26th. Unfortunately, no agreement was reached, and as a result, staff is presenting to you this evening Resolution 65-11, which requests unilateral adoption of the compensation and working conditions for the SEIU Local 620 employees. The terms and conditions are consistent with the direction provided by the City Council. And please note, if the resolution is approved, the deductions will begin on October 1st, and will be fiscal year equivalent of the fiscal year equivalent of 2%. I would also like to add that the conditions in this resolution, including the 2% loss that is recommended for the SEIU employees, has been approved and is currently in effect for the confidential employees, the management employees, the department heads, as well as Mr. Schultz and I. I will note this evening that Mr. Avery is here in the front row, your labor negotiator, as well as Ms. Slayton, the administrative services director, for any questions you may have on specific contract language. With that, I'll turn it back over to you, Mayor Yates.
Thank you. Before we open this up, any questions? Any questions over here? I'm going to invite you up, Mike. Mike, I'm afraid I don't have your last name, but you'll state it for us in a second. Mike is the SEIU, I don't know what your title is, but works in the office and represents our SEIU city employees, and we welcome you and your associate. Yes, Bridget.
Good evening.
10 minutes. Thank you. Hi, Mike.
Okay. Good evening, Honorable Mayor, City Council. My name is Mike Woods, and I'm here tonight to speak to you on behalf of the employees of the city that are represented by SEIU Local 620. As Andrea stated earlier, the city and SEIU began negotiations on February the 3rd, and we only met 5 times to discuss the successor agreement for the renewal of our memorandum of understanding. Due to the chief spokesperson's unavailability, both on my part and Mr. Avery during the month of March, because of other commitments, it restricted us from meeting more often. So that's why we only met during the 5 times. At our last meeting, the city gave the union a last best and final offer, which we interpreted to be that the city was unwilling to move off of their original offer from day one. The union did not declare impasse, as stated in your staff report. It was the city that declared impasse. We basically told the city that apparently we're not going to be able to make any more movement here the way that it's going, and that's when impasse was declared. Okay. We were willing to continue talking, you know, about reaching a comparable agreement with the city. The union did agree to waive the right to meet with the city manager, as the report says. And that was just one of the options that were in the impasse procedures for the city, because the city manager was the one, apparently, in our opinion, that was giving the direction to the negotiating team, because they met with her, I'm assuming, on, you know, after every meeting. So that's why we moved to progress on to the mediation stage. Okay. During our mediation process with the city's negotiation team, the state mediator, and the union, our team made an offer to continue the contract status quo for 1 year. This offer was made as the city had given the Police Officers Association a new contract with no changes except to an increase in their health benefits, which is the same amount that our members are currently paying for their health benefits. That offer was declined by the city. The city's original proposal has not changed from day one, with the exception of that they wanted all the employees to pay the full member fee for their retirement in their PERS accounts. Even though this item was the only item that was changed, we felt that the city had no intention of dealing with our members, you know, in these contract talks fairly. The last best and final offer from the city's negotiation team was only to counter the items that the union had placed on the table for discussion in addition to their original proposal. In reference to the compensation cuts that the city is looking to take place on the employees of the city, our alternative to the two-tier system is that we need to look for savings elsewhere rather than taking over $2,000 a year from the lowest paid employees in the city. When you look at this, management's average salary is at or above $10,000 per month for the 8 top managers or positions in the city. That equates to $1,050,956 per year versus the average salary of an SEIU-represented employee of approximately $4,000 a month for 46 employees, which cost the city $2,307,348 per year. Management salaries are approximately 2.5 times more than the employees that are represented here tonight. In addition to this, these takeaways from our members, not once was anything mentioned to the city by the city to manage about the management suffering the same cuts as our employees were. Yet when we discussed with the city about receiving the same amounts taken away, we were told that management and the police officers paid their share of the retirement cost. When we pressed the issue and asked questions about what they meant by that they were already paying their fair share of the retirement cost, they said that approximately 4 to 5 years ago, the police officers and city management received inflated salaries to offset the differential in their PERS. In other words, what we're saying, looking at, is management and the police department employees received anywhere from a 7 to a 9% pay raise to offset to pay for the PERS instead of the city paying it. They gave them a pay raise to pay for that, which in our estimation is why. Okay. This is our first alternative, and obviously it's a dramatic statement to make, but you know, we're here tonight to let you know that if you lower the top 8 positions in the city by 10%, the savings would be $105,096. That equates to almost $110,000 that the city is asking to take away from the folks that we represent. That even if you took that away from those top 8 positions, they would still be making over $100,000 a year. Okay, we're asking you tonight to send your negotiation team back to the table to seek a contract that we can live with. Okay, so we can give us the same contract as the police department, okay, status quo for 1 year. Then we can come back and revisit the city's budgets, see how we look in the next year. That would be our alternative number 2, is to have a status quo contract for 1 year. Some cons about the two-tier retirement system. In the long term, to see returns of savings to the city, it would be 10 to 20 years when new hire employees retired that you would actually see the large amount of savings that the two-tier system would give you. Lower employee morale from new hires not having the same benefits as their co-workers that work beside them, that's going to be an issue. Lower standards of future applicants for open positions, as they will be looking for similar retirement benefits as those people that are currently working. Also, the 2% at 60 retirement and other agencies in the area with the 2.2% at 55 retirement plan that is just the second tier, you know, those folks would prefer to work for those agencies possibly than they would to come here to Morro Bay. If you can't pull them in because you have a different retirement system than someone else, you know, and I have negotiated other contracts in this area at 2% at 55, okay, on a 3-year average for our members. Okay, these employees would use the city for a training ground. Once they got their skill levels at an increased level, they would go elsewhere where they could make better money and better benefits. That's one of the drawbacks of this two-tier retirement system. Okay, this proposal to take money out of the pockets of the lowest paid employees in the city and some of the lowest paid in the San Luis County, when all other represented and unrepresented units in the city are not having the same thing taken away from them, is not what we call fair disposition of the economic share throughout the city. The salary comparison of our members to other agencies are below average, and I'll give you some examples. For instance, a Harbor Patrol officer is 7.6% below the market for other Harbor Patrols around the area. And these are the city's numbers, not ours. Okay? An accounting clerk is 5% below. An associate planner, 11% below market. Maintenance worker 2, 4.5% below the average market in the area. Recreation supervisor, 12.7% below. Water treatment operator, 9.4% below. Wastewater plant operator, 9.7%.
Hi.
Hello, Mike Mobley, City of I live in Los Osos, but I'm a City of Morro Bay employee. I'd like to thank you for taking time to consider our situation before you decide on this very important issue. I have been at the bargaining table with the rank and file employees and the upper end of management team. As you're aware, management is proposing to increase the cost of our PERS along with other cuts to our income and insurance rate increases. We are some of the lowest paid employees in the county. We do not have money to give out of our already struggling paychecks, yet those who are recommending this are some of the highest paid employees in the city of Morro Bay and therefore seem unable to relate to the burden that they ask us. As a matter of fact, management recently inflated their salaries to cover 100% of their PERS offset. How can management ask rank and file employees to pay more into the PERS when they are given a raise to compensate for all of that? The city of Morro Bay is unfairly attempting to use its lowest paid employees as a funding source. On behalf of myself and the fellow employees, we are asking the city council to amend the management proposal and not to jump on the bandwagon of public sentiment. The two-tier retirement system has only minute savings up front, and the long-term result is for the city will become a training ground for future applicants. This will only cost the city more in the long run, and the system has proven to create unnecessary division among the workforce and other cities and organizations. Please instruct the management bargaining team to go back to the table and start bargaining for a fair and equitable contract. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. You did a great job getting your point across. Hi.
Hello. My name is John Gunnerlock. I work for the wastewater treatment plant. I was part of the negotiation team for the miscellaneous employees. The experience was very disappointing to me. There were no negotiations taking place at any of these meetings. I don't understand why the city would pay a high-priced negotiator to pass us the same piece of paper over and over. I don't understand why the city is balancing the budget on the backs of hardworking miscellaneous employees. The majority of the miscellaneous employees are not part of the general fund, not part of the problem, and already some of the lowest paid public employees in the state. The city does not pay into Social Security, so the PERS retirement is all many of us will have. In the past, negotiations were give and take. We have given up pay raises, caps on vacation, comp time, 100% medical for employee and plus family to get where we're at now. In the past, we have given up pay raises and told to be content with having a job in this beautiful city, while management ended up receiving pay raises in excess of 10%, car allowances, and matching deferred compensation, which we don't get. This time, we're told that we are a team. Everybody has to sacrifice a little bit, and that's all groups would take a hit. We do not like the fact that this is not the case, and miscellaneous employees are being hit the hardest. The majority of miscellaneous employees cannot afford to raise their families in Morro Bay, but are expected to be called back to work within 20 minutes. Just yesterday, I received a job flyer from Napomo Wastewater Treatment Plant. They're currently offering higher wages, 3% at 60, 100% medical for employee plus the family. We are the employees that produce safe drinking water. We protect the environment, health, and safety. We keep this city a great place for residents to live and tourists to visit. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, John. Evan? Hi.
Hi, my name is Evan Buddenhagen. I'm a citizen of Morro Bay. I have lived and worked here for over 25 years, and I'm currently a Harbor Patrol officer and have been for the last 14 years. I'd like to thank you and all of the council members and my fellow city employees for coming to this meeting, as I believe the council's decision made here tonight will determine the future of Morro Bay for better or for worse. I appreciate the fact that we, the rank-and-file employees, have this opportunity to voice our position and concerns about the council's decision to impose a two-tier retirement system here in Morro Bay. I don't feel we were able to do that in negotiation. I believe to balance the budget on the backs of the lowest-paid 46 employees is truly counterproductive and will only hurt the future of Morro Bay. This is because, one, the two-tiered system will not be a quick source of revenue. If we look at the 8 top-paid city employees, we see that many are making over $10,000 a month in a town of 10,000. Management was also given a 7% pay hike to offset their contribution to PERS, as along with some of the other public service employees. If council were to cut the top 8 employee salaries by 10%, it would result in immediate savings. We wouldn't have to wait years. It would be immediate. And it would get us past our current budget deficits. Even with this pay cut, management would continue to make over $100,000 a year, and it would also greatly reduce the burden on the PERS retirement system. Please be responsible and withdraw the two-tiered plan. Please do not fall for flawed political agendas. The future of Morro Bay is in your hands tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Evan. Who'd like to go next? Look at this shirt. This guy's got good taste. Hi.
I hope we get him at the same place.
So.
My name is Philip Carey. I'm a resident of Morro Bay. My tax dollars should be used to uphold a high level of service with a professional workforce. We seem to be cutting from some of the most important employees in the city. Water, wastewater, and collection system employees are the people who protect the city from cholera, typhoid, dysentery, and some of the worst diseases known. Look back in history. How many people have died from the diseases? These certified men and women prevent on a daily basis, millions of people. One mistake from any of these three departments, people can get sick, die, thousands of dollars in fines or lawsuits, and there go all the savings. They protect the jewel of the city, the Estero Bay, and I know they take pride that the beach has never been closed due to wastewater plant or collection system negligence. The Harbor Patrol officers do a great job keeping the recreation safe in the bay, and Parks Department helps keep Morro Bay beautiful and attractive. How does the city expect to maintain streets with a street maintenance department of 2 when in the past there were 7? Are you cutting from the very people who keep the city functioning while all the council and highly paid management has failed to create new revenue? Continuing on this path will only lower the quality of service in this community, increase liability, and push today's problems on future generations. I believe this approach is media-driven and not a fair representation of the majority of the taxpayers. The management partners report, on which the city spent $75,000, states that salaries in the general fund should be increased by 5% in 08-09, 5% in 09-10, and 2.85% thereafter, and all other funds, including enterprise funds, are to be cost-covering, and nowhere did it state to cut benefits, and I quote from that report, "The city has implemented a flexible hiring freeze such that most positions are frozen but can be filled with council approval and, more importantly, held staff compensation at below levels across the city, an approach that cannot be sustained in the long term. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Philip. Who would like to go next? Betty?
Good evening again. I'm Betty Winholtz. I think it's important for the SEIU and the public and to remind the council that we're at this position not just because of management, but because of this council. Because this management only takes direction from this council. So already you've shown your hand in terms of where you're standing with your public employees. I think it's also important to remember that our goal here is to have a balanced budget. And if you're balancing, as they have said, and I think there's been a number of great points made tonight from comparison to the other contracts, from what upper management's making to what, you know, other people are making, you know, someone's making literally 3 to 4 times what someone else is making. And I understand that in terms of responsibility, you get more money. But should you get 4 times as much money as someone who's working equally hard in their own skill field? I would remind the council that the Tribune and the LA Times and myself have reminded you that you are some of the highest paid city council people in the state, in spite of us being a small town, that you're some of the highest paid management, as has already been referred to, in spite of our size in the state. And so I think it's a good point that you need to look elsewhere to balance this budget. And whether you choose to go with the 10% or you choose to maintain status quo for a year and negotiate, I think you need to do something, because I agree this is a defining moment.
Instead of with their pay scales and things, but also their future. We have 2 brand new Harbor Patrol officers who have just been hired. And tonight, it's just amazing to me that tonight the 5 of you can decide on their futures for so far, you know, down the line, maybe 20 years. But I guess that's all I wanted to say, is if you could just consider not passing the resolution tonight and allowing us to have another year of just waiting to see, I don't know, what the economy does or what other alternatives there could be. And from my heart, that's what I would like. Thank you.
Thanks, Polly. Hi.
Department.
I want you to start over in the mic.
Sorry, my name's Devin Francis, work for the Water Department in Morro Bay. I don't have any numbers or figures. I don't want to attack anyone's salary or pay or what they make. We all work pretty hard and a lot of stress and decisions for what we do. I feel that if 2% of our pay is going to affect the city that adversely, that we've got a lot bigger issues to think about. I just wonder, you know, the future of the city with that amount of money doesn't seem like a lot, maybe overall, but if that amount of money is going to affect us that much, then we got more things to think about, I think, than just 1 year's salary. All right. That's all I have to say.
Thanks, Devin. Who else? Don't be shy. Here we go, Roger. Roger's generally very shy, but I guess he's overcome it tonight. Hi.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. As usual, I've been watching on the television.
Roger, if you'd be so kind. For the record, state your name.
Oh, my gosh.
I know, but it's a recording, you know.
So. Roger Ewing, forgive me. As I said, I've been watching on television, and I was rather impressed with the presentation made by the gentleman representing our employees' union. And it would seem to me, I don't know what has been said too often prior to my arrival here, but tonight it's all about fairness. And we're all connected to the global economy. So we all know that the economy is having a rough time. And it's not an easy decision you have to make tonight. But I ask you, as a resident and as a human being, put yourself in the shoes of our employees and what they go through to manage an existence month to month, raising kids, raising a family, paying their mortgage, etc. I'm not an economist, so I don't know numbers, as the previous speaker stated, but I do know that if you really want to abide by what's right and what's fair, you'll find a way to do it. And it's up to you whether you control staff's salary or not. A two-tier system, I, based on what I've heard tonight, seems to be a method to keep staff in a high salary. And the onus is on the employees. Because if you have a two-tier, it doesn't really affect staff. They've already got their salaries. I really urge you, be fair, because right now it's not. I mean, they're the lowest paid employees in the county with a staff who has the highest salaries in the county. And we're a population of 10,000. Something's wrong. Our employees that live here have to pay a living expense, and that keeps going up. But you're asking them to take less in salary by paying $200 more into a fund that they won't see for 20, 30 years. So let's put your heads together. Think right. Think about our employees. They are the ones who do the work. They're the ones that keep the city looking good. They're the lifeblood of what moves our city. So it's only right that you treat them fair. And have a good meeting. Thank you for listening.
Very poignant, Roger. Who would like to go next? Anybody else? Anybody? Going once? Going twice? I'll bring it back. Thank you, Mike Woods. I think you guys have a great union rep in Mike. He's impressed me. And thanks to the next Mike for coming up, and John and Evan, Philip, Betty, Polly, Devin, and Roger Ewing. We appreciate hearing from you. This is very difficult. I do want to say up top, I hope that our city employees feel the...
...to avoid that, and I'm thankful that we have, and I think it's an important step that we're taking tonight. I'm still in favor of going with the two-tier. It's looking into the future. It's important that we are able to stabilize and maintain an operational, a balanced budget that we can depend on, that these positions, although cut in pay and in benefits, that they still be there. And I think there's still work potentially that's going to need to be done. I think some of the points that were brought up tonight about the management and pay levels in comparison to the higher versus the lower level employees are important points, and most likely will be really focused on or at least discussed again in the next round, because obviously this is just a one-year contract, but it's essential that that is heard and recognized as we go forward with an unknown future with our economy. And I think the adjustments that tonight we're potentially going to make are going to help us avoid layoffs again in the future. And that was the key for me in supporting this. The other thing that's important, too, is that employees across the board have made sacrifices, and those are appreciated and are necessary. We were able to focus some of the savings back into the infrastructure, which is obviously was raised, needs a lot of improvements and investments, and we're fairly behind throughout the city on infrastructure and our needs there. So that we're trying to balance all of that. And again, I think it's just one of those things where this isn't perfect, but it's a step that really avoided a major major amount of loss in the form of layoffs. So I am still in favor of moving forward with this tonight. I think this has been applied fairly equally across the board, and I appreciate your work.
Well, first of all, we do appreciate you folks. I've been here in this town for a lot of years, and I've watched a lot of you people out there working, and personally, I really appreciate you. You've kept the city about as good as we could possibly do with what we've got. It's tough. This is a tough, tough decision, and I'm weighing really heavy right now. But to avoid any more layoffs, that's layoffs is the worst thing you can do. I mean, you look over, you look at the guy sitting next to you and say, well, he was working yesterday, but today's not. So I don't know. We'll see. Hear a little bit more from the rest of the council, but I'm just, this is really tough, and it's really weighing heavy on my heart.
I'm not going to support this. This is not going to shock council and staff. I've always been in the position that a deal's a deal, and if we say we're going to pay you $100 a day, and then the next year, or let's call it this year, we say, well, now we're going to pay you $98 a day. Yeah, I am not comfortable with that. I will state that I am behind the two-tier system, but because they're tied together in the same resolution, I'm going to vote against the resolution. But I want to be clear, and I think I have been clear with many of you, I am supportive of the two-tier system. I am not supportive of the 2%. And this has been consistent with me forever. And I thank you, Betty, for giving me this power over this council. But, we'll see how that turns out. This is my feeling, and they have theirs. And I will acknowledge that the SEIU did support me financially during the campaign. There is absolutely no nexus between that and what I'm saying now. On one hand, I'm with them, and on another hand, I'm not. So that is my position, and that's where I'm going to be voting tonight, Nancy.
Thanks a bunch. You have to know this is probably the hardest issue I know that I've had to deal with since I've been up here. We do appreciate all the hard work. And I'm going to reiterate a couple of things that Noah and George said, and a couple of things I heard. First, we're not making any layoffs, and I think that's very important that nobody's losing their job this year. One of the main things we had to do in balancing the budget was look at our infrastructure and listen to our citizens about how they need their potholes filled and the streets paved and how important that is and how long it's gone on without that. And we really worked and worked at this and figured that this was the only way we could do this. I think in terms of the two-tier,
I look out here and a lot of you are friends and neighbors and people I've worked with, and I have all the respect, as I think you I would hope understand from all of us, that this is not an easy decision for any of us as we've headed through this. And for me, it's always been about trying to find balance and balancing our, as been expressed, infrastructure needs that we've had to defer, balancing staff so that we're adequately staffed. Last year, based on your contract that was done by a prior council before us, they gave you a 3-year contract, knowing that the third year they weren't going to be able to necessarily know how they were going to pay it, which was last year when you received a 4% raise. We asked last year for SEIU to defer the raise, and that was rejected. We took away management's raise last year. They didn't get one. And with some of the SEIU employees, people you worked with, we ended up laying them off because we couldn't balance the raises and keep everybody working. So as we've moved forward this year, we've tried to be more even and fair by making it 2% across the board. It wasn't based on salaries, wages. Some of the people that work in our, management's salaries, some of these people that work here have worked here for over 30 years. They've earned the pay that they have, and so to throw that out there and use that, for me, really isn't a fair, example of what you're using. They've earned that salary. We're addressing them all, and at this point, I feel that I'm going to be supportive of this and the two-tiered benefits, along with some of my other council members.
Anything else? Why don't you make the motion?
I'll move approval of B1.
Do Do I hear a second?
Second.
Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. No. Motion? No. Motion carries 3-2.
I changed my mind.
And, you know, I know you're disappointed. You know, I ask you to...
Okay, we just had it set.
Well...
The two-tier system...
Yeah, I'm angry.
...to the 2%. If they just would have had it separated. I look... Oh, no. No. I know. I said it was weighing on my heart right now.
B2, Ms. Luker.
That's not true.
Doesn't matter. Please.
I'm going to move to Ms. Susan Slayton for this presentation.
Good evening, Mayor Yates and council members. This is an ordinance, or actually it's the first introduction and reading of ordinance number 570. It's intended to require the presentation of a photo ID when signing up for water. We've already adopted our fraud prevention plan, which requires that we produce photo ID. We now just want to move that requirement into the municipal code so that it has a little bit more force with some of the new people that come into town who want us to, you know, show me where it's written down that I have to do this. And we usually, what we present to everyone is the municipal code. This is what guides us, tells us what we need to do, how we need to proceed. I believe that this is an important addition to that section. And I'll turn it back to you, Mary Yates.
You mind if I ask a question first? Is there any other way to do this other than, or I guess I'm looking at you too, Rob, and other than ordinance? You know, I'm generally against increasing, you know, more ordinances. I'm supportive of what you're trying to do here. Is there not another way to do this? I heard what you said at the end.
Not that I'm aware of. We, you know, if we have something in the municipal code, it just empowers us further to show them, you know, show people when they don't want to provide photo IDs, when they're asking us, you know, I don't like to do this, I'm afraid of my identity, you know, my identity is going to be stolen. And this gives us an opportunity to pull out that particular section. It's yeah. Just adding a few lines, and it just says, here it is. It's not, you know, I understand where you're going, but it does give us a little bit of teeth to say this is why we're doing it. And it makes things very difficult for us if we don't have that information. We've fortunately.
You know, I understand what you're trying to do here. You had, you know, one or two people have, you know, caused this problem, and now we're adding to the ordinance book. I could get overruled here. Won't be the first time tonight. But that's my view, and I'll go to Carla.
I'm fine with it, the way staff's presented it.
Nancy?
Are we doing comments before? Excuse me. Are we doing comments before public hearing?
You know, you can ask questions or make a comment, whatever you like.
I don't like. I mean, I'm fine.
George? No?
I'm okay with it.
Would any of you like to speak on this item? This is a public hearing. Seeing none, I will bring it back to council. Then I'll look for you to make a motion. Are you okay with this?
I am, and I will move approval of B2.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? No. Motion carries 4-1. B3, this is back to you, Susan.
Mayor, I believe this is a reading.
Oh, one of those things.
Yes.
Go ahead and read.
Thank you. This is ordinance number 571, ordinance of the City Council of the City of Morro Bay to amend the City of Morro Bay's Municipal Code Title 3, Revenue and Finance, Chapter 3.30, Unclaimed Money and Property, Section 3.30.080, proceeds to be deposited into general fund to read. I'm reading the wrong one. My apologies. Let's start over. Sounded pretty good, though. Let's try ordinance number...
Oh, we all caught it right away.
Let's try ordinance number 570. Ordinance of the City Council of the City of the City of Morro Bay to amend the City of Morro Bay's Municipal Code Title 13, Public Utilities, Chapter 13-04, Water Service and Rates, Section 13.04.070, Application for Regular Service to Acquire Identification.
Thank you. B3, Ms. Slayton.
Thank you very much. This is another another ordinance, and this one in particular, I wanted to change the disposition of proceeds for auction monies. The way it states right now, all auction monies, no matter who's holding the auction, the money comes to the general fund. And while you know that the general fund is near and dear to my heart, it worries me that the harbor department, and I'll use them as the example because they're the ones that usually wind up in this situation. They have vessels that they frequently have to auction off. One of the problems there is that they've generated a lot of staff time, a lot of costs have been incurred in getting this thing ready to auction, and they arrive at the auction and they get, oh boy, $2,000, and the general fund gets it for doing absolutely nothing. So I thought, in a sense of fairness, that maybe it would be appropriate to say that the enterprise funds should be allowed to keep their auction proceeds. And that's what this ordinance will do. And again, this is another introduction of first reading. Thank you.
Thank you.
Did I start with Carl last time? Or you? You remember? You, Noah.
I'm comfortable with this, and I think it's a good adjustment.
George? Anything over here?
My only question for you, Susan, is this is not a new ordinance. This is a change to an existing ordinance?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Carl, anything? This is a public hearing. If any of you would like to address us, this is the appropriate time. Seeing none, I will bring it back to council. Anything else before a motion? A little more difficulty with this one because you're changing it, but this could be, you know, what would really make me happy, but I'm obviously going to be in the short end of the stick again, would be to take this out, again, pass a resolution. But that said, I will hear a motion.
Move approval, B3.
Okay. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion? No. Motion carries 4-1. Ms. Luker.
This is ordinance number 571, an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Morro Bay to amend the City of Morro Bay's Municipal Code Title III, Revenue and Finance, Chapter 3.30, Unclaimed Money and Property, Section 3.30.080, Proceeds to be Deposited in General Fund, to read Disposition of Proceeds.
Thank you. B4, this one I love. Mr. Schultz.
Yes, at your August 23rd, 2011 meeting, the council passed Resolution 6211, which amended the advisory board handbook and also updated all the bylaws for all the advisory bodies, and also implemented Planning Commission bylaws, which sets forth the establishment duties and responsibilities of the Planning Commission. With the addition of the Planning Commission bylaws to the advisory handbook, Chapter 2.28 of the Morro Bay Municipal Code is unnecessary and redundant. And therefore, this ordinance would delete in its entirety Chapter 2.28 relating to the
department, one or more planning commissions, administrative bodies, and hearing officers. So in other words, the state law says this belongs in your municipal code. It's not on the same level as the Public Works Advisory Board, or unfortunately not on the same level as your Harbor Advisory Board. This is a board that has quasi-judicial authority. It changes people's lives over planning issues, and it's supposed to be part of your permanent document, your municipal code. It's not just an advisory body. It doesn't belong in just a little handbook somewhere, much like the discussion you were having a minute ago on the other issue. So I would hope that you would reconsider this. If you want it in the handbook, fine, but it needs to stay in the municipal code as well.
Thank you, Betty. Anybody else? I'll bring it back to council. Mr. Schultz, it's staying in the municipal code and then just referring to the handbook. Is that correct? Yeah, so it's still in the code. And other references.
There's other references to the government code in the advisory bodies.
Thanks. Any questions or comments over here? Over here. I will hear a motion, please. Why don't you do it? You do it, George. Move approval would be four. Oh, you're still upset. You do it, Noah.
Why don't you do it?
Okay, I'll move approval of item B4.
Second.
Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carries 5-0. D1, Mr. Schultz.
Mayor.
Yes.
This is...
one of those.
Yes.
Forgive me.
But then we're done, and there's no more tonight.
Thank you. Thanks for keeping me on the track.
Ordinance
5-0. Yeah.
Number 572, an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Morro Bay repealing Chapter 2.28 of the Morro Bay Municipal Code related to the Planning Commission and implementing instead the Planning Commission bylaws.
Thank you. D1, Mr. Schultz.
Yes. This item is requesting authorization to file a notice of joinder with the California Public Utilities Commission protesting the application filed by PG&E regarding their opt-out program for customers who object to the smart meter installation. There's been much interest expressed with regards to this subject. City Hall gets numerous calls, and so is my office. Continually does on a weekly basis regarding the opt-out program and what the City of Morro Bay is doing at this time. In response to that, Council did pass Resolution 6310 back in December and requested that PG&E not install any meters in Morro Bay, requested PG&E to provide meetings for the public for outreach program, and requested that PG&E provide an opt-out program. In March of this year, PG&E has submitted a proposal with the California Public Utilities Commission to give residential customers the option to opt out of the smart meter program. That cost, though, is a one-time charge of between $135 and $270, and also has an ongoing monthly fixed charge of between $14 and $20. After the item was declared as a future agenda item, I looked into what other cities were doing. The town of Fairfax, along with Marin County, Mendocino County, Lake County, City of Capitola, and some advocacy groups have all filed protests to that petition that was filed by PG&E on their opt-out program. You also, in early August, as I stated earlier, received a letter requesting us to join that. And that's what's on your agenda tonight to decide whether you want to join that petition in front of the PUC. There'd be absolutely no fiscal impact to joining in on the petition. I will say, though, that the County of San Luis Obispo and County of Santa Barbara and other cities have simply just, instead of filing the actual joiner, have submitted a letter in protest to their opt-out program, and that certainly is an option that council can do if they so decide, or they can decide not to take any action at this time. So with that, I'll turn it back to the council.
No, it's your item. You take it.
Okay, I'd like to start by saying I do support actually joining this this action. I think that our citizens and residents, those that are aware of this and those that aren't, deserve the option to have a choice. At this point, our resolution that we passed previously hasn't been fully respected by PG&E, and therefore it makes sense to try to communicate to the CPUC to let them know our concerns, and hopefully that those will be addressed in their decision. So I'm in favor of that. I think it still gives PG&E the option of installing these. We're just making our need for
here and do this. I don't have any problem with this smart meter, and I've talked to many people about it, and I don't know what other people have told me. The other council members have said that they've had a lot of people talk to them about it, and they didn't like it. I haven't found one person do that, and I think this thing has been studied, and I don't know, but I don't want to join this.
Well, I'll be, you know, I'm not in favor of it. I think it's interesting that you're getting many calls, and I believe you. I've not gotten one call or one email and almost 2,000 of these have been installed in town. And if we're representing the community at large, I do not hear or feel any kind of outcry. There's been, mine's been installed at my house. Joking with Rob today, we're starting to feel headaches, but you know, it's a joke. It just doesn't seem like there's anything to them. I'd like to ask Ms. Wilmore, PG&E is here, to get on the delay list. Is there a charge for that? No. So this all this talk about $240 and, you know, $20 a month, there's a PG&E has a number you can call. You get on their delay list until it goes through the hearings and the process ends, and the public will be heard, and it doesn't cost anything, and no smart meter will be put at your house. What more do you want? You know, it's we'll just go through everybody. It was a rhetorical question. You know, the World Health Organization has deemed them completely safe, and I just don't have any issue at all with the smart meters, Nancy.
Well, obviously, I have a different population in town than you, Mr. Mayor, and that's just the way it is. Lots of people have called me, and aside from their concerns about health issues, which I don't even want to get into, I think the biggest issue is the cost. Now, you've just said that there's no cost to get on the delay list, but once your delay period is over, I understand that they're still going to charge you anywhere from $135 to $250 to opt out, plus an additional charge on your monthly bill. So the cost is still there, and for a lot of people, that's a lot of money. That's more than they pay on their PG&E bill right now, the whole thing. I have to agree with Mr. Smuckler that I don't think our previous resolution was respected by PG&E. We asked not to have them installed right away and to wait until things changed. They obviously are doing them if you have one. I personally don't have a problem, but I know lots of other people do. So I feel like whether we want to or not, I think we need to join this group because they're not listening to us as a small town, and we need a no-cost opt-out option for people who don't want this in their yard for whatever reason they don't want it. Thank you.
I'm not concerned personally about perceived health issues, but I would have to respect those who may feel there is. I don't have a right to tell them they shouldn't worry if they worry. That's their prerogative, and I don't want to belittle that. My concern is, you know, for me personally is not that, but looking at the community as a whole, I have heard from people in around the community more in regards to the change in rates that the smart meters have brought. I don't know that I'm disappointed that the letter kind of went by the wayside. We knew it really didn't have a lot of teeth in it, and most anything we do doesn't, because the utility commission is the one that's permitting all this, so we're pretty limited to what we can do. I certainly support the opt-out option at no cost. I think it's really unfair, whether it's a delay or an opt-out, until there's final decisions made at a legislative level, to have people have to pay to have them removed or to wait. So as far as the no-cost opt-out, I certainly am supportive. But at this crossroad right now tonight, I don't know that I'm willing to join in on a action by a group, a small group of communities that I'm not really sure to what extent that action is.
Well, I guess we're all finished, huh, Noah?
I would like to ask Mr. Schultz to go over just a rough review of what that action is. So,
and if that's the major issue of this, it goes through it, and you can go through the points beginning on 14, is to have an opt-out plan that includes an option to retain and use analog logical meters. That's one of the issues, though, is not only do you get to opt out, but you also have the ability to retain your analog meter instead of putting in the wireless one. So that's a little different than just a low-cost one. It's also being able to keep that meter. And most of this whole petition goes into the fact that, at least that they believe, that PG&E has not studied or overstated the reasonable cost of the opt-out program for each person. And ordering, it does order. The one thing, it goes a little bit further, but it wouldn't affect us, is it does say the commission should promptly order PG&E to comply with the local government moratoriums that have been enacted. We don't have a moratorium that we, like some others did, specifically passed ordinances saying you cannot install these in our city. So that part of the petition wouldn't affect us. But if we did file a moratorium, then we could join in that part of it. So primarily the one issue that we're dealing with on this would be, and that's where we would specifically say in our joiner, is just looking for the opt-out program providing either a no-cost or the least expensive, or to relook at those costs that are being charged or proposed to be charged.
So we can be specific to that only? Okay.
Can I ask PG&E for clarity on the charge and the delay list, and is that delay in the charge, and what does that mean exactly?
Yes, thank you.
You hear the concern, right?
Mayor Yates, members of the council, my name is Patricia Wilmore, and I'm the local area manager for government relations for Pacific Gas and Electric Company. So where we are currently is that we did file on March 24th a proposal to the CPUC responding to their request that we provide some opt-out program for our customers. And in this proposal, we did include a request for a fee. However, the CPUC has not ruled on that proposal, and in fact, they are holding this workshop tomorrow to discuss what an opt-out program should look like for all the utilities. So the CPUC is currently in process on looking at this. In the meantime, we have said, in response to our customers' concerns, and again, as was mentioned in this community, we have now installed almost 2,000 meters, and overall, we have a lot of pleased customers who feel that this is going to help them with energy efficiency and conservation. But respecting the process that the CPUC will go through, and they're our regulator, and so we're waiting for them to tell us what should an opt-out program look like, we have established a delay list so that any resident who does not want a smart meter at this time can call 1-877-743-7378 and be put on that delay list. And then when the CPUC gives us a decision that will apply not only to PG&E, but all the utilities in California are being directed to convert to some sort of smart meter technology, then whatever opt-out program they agree to will apply to all of the utilities in the state and will be offered to all of the customers. And the CPUC is very eager that it might be a standardized opportunity. So, again, not just a PG&E program. So we feel that we and our regulators are moving forward with responding to customer concerns. Thank you. And if we can answer any other questions, with me tonight is Michael Herz, who is an EMF program manager. If you have any questions regarding health concerns, safety, privacy, any of those, which have all indeed been brought up, and we're certainly willing to answer customer questions. I might mention that we have had an open house here that did receive some good response, and always open to talking to customers. Thank you.
Thanks, Patricia. Back to you.
Okay, so that said, I think my point has just been made, is the CPUC is really in a period of deliberation, and by us taking this action tonight, clearly stating that our issue is needing or requesting the CPUC to have a no-cost opt-out component to this, we're influencing the decision maker as best we can to provide choice. And therefore, I think it's important that we make this, that we take this action and join this effort. So I'll move, if that's okay.
Go ahead.
That we file a notice of joiner with the CPUC protesting the application filed by PG&E.
Their decision's going to be tomorrow, but for me right now, doing something similar to San Luis Obispo County and Santa Barbara County, just really enforcing the opt-out option until we see what they're going to rule on. We can always come back and do the joiner next month, down the road, whatever, but I guess I'm on the fence with that part of it.
Well, I would suggest...
Can we just do it down the line? Then you'll go last, and you can say whatever you like. Nancy?
I'm going to support the joiner at this point, basically because it seems like our only choice, and they haven't listened in the past, and I know we have a lot of folks who need a free opt-out option.
And my problem with it is joining in a legal thing with others that we could, I think the opt-out, no cost, you know, I can't see fault with that, but we could certainly send the same message with a letter, and I would be supportive of that, and I think the argument back would be, well, this has got more teeth, I don't know, but it's a legal action, and I'm not going to support it. George.
Well, I'm not supporting it either. I agree with what Carla put it, but really well, no use repeating all that and what Bill added there. So I am not supporting this.
Noah.
My comment would be that if we take this action tonight, we are doing everything we possibly can to influence the decision. I think it will be the most opportune way for our voice to be heard. To pass the letter would definitely be a fallback option and something that I think we should pursue in lieu of that. But I think it really starts to diminish what we're doing, and then it becomes something that we have to track. And again, we wrote a resolution that hasn't been respected and has really not had any influence, as far as I know, on the CPUC's decision. By joining these other small communities, we're giving ourselves the chance for that voice to be heard. And I think it would be heard tomorrow, actually, because they would be aware of our joining of this effort.
Great. Anything else?
Yeah, just before you call the question, would comment that the letter wasn't necessarily... We passed this before saying we would wait until we heard from the Assembly. And from the Senate or wherever it went, I don't even remember now, on their ruling. And so I don't think that it wasn't that they didn't hear us. We gave direction to wait till we heard back from the legislature. So
we're good. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No. Motion fails 3-2.
Can I try a new motion?
Go ahead.
I'd like to move that we direct staff to... follow up in a similar manner as San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara County, submitting a letter to the CUP Commission on a no-cost opt-out provision.
Second.
Well, I'm going to object just on the basis it doesn't fit with the title on here. Anybody else?
Well, I'd like some discussion as well. We have clear discussion of this option within the staff report. It's the third or fourth paragraph within the discussion. Reviewing that as another option, I think we have an issue that needs to be resolved. My only amendment that I'd ask is that if possible, we're able to submit that letter in time for them to be aware of it, at least for the workshop tomorrow.
I would look to staff for that.
Yeah.
I would look to staff on the first question, and then this question. Can we... I'm going by the title here, and I don't see anything about letter. So I just want
you're,
to leave with me.
You're separating out a joinder from a letter, and I don't see a difference. What you're doing is you are filing a protest with the PUC on the opt-out program. One way to do it was basically... by having an attorney there with the joinder, would provide us with updates exactly what was going on that I could feed back to you. Now we'll submit the letter, and there probably won't be any follow-up to know exactly what went on at the workshop or anything else. So I don't see anything different with that, and the public would know that you were taking up the idea of protesting, whether it was in the form of the letter or joinder. That being said, we could do the letter. We've got the Santa Barbara and the county one, and we could get it filed tomorrow. There isn't going to be any decision on these issues for, at, I'd probably say, 6 months, 3 to 6 months, because it's just a workshop, and the PUC still is trying to get an opt-out program from California Edison and the other ones because they do want it all uniformed.
Me, I just respond to that, and then I'll butt out. I'm just going to stand by what I said. It reads, authorization to file a notice of joiner with the California Public Utilities Commission. That, you know, I'm okay with the letter. This is a process thing with me.
Their group included asked me that we discuss extending our smoking ban beyond the beaches. So I'd like to see this as a future agenda item with a public hearing. Thank you.
I'd support that.
Carla? Okay.
Sorry. This has been declared and supported by two council members. Three. Declared by one, supported by two. It's the same thing, Noah. Carla? Okay. Anything from staff? Anything from council? Thank you. We're adjourned. 8:20.